Hello, everybody. Welcome. My name is Dees Levutin. This is the East Hampton Poetry Marathon. This is our 25th year doing this. And tonight, you know, we have a poetry weekly workshop, and we always chew each other out if anyone dares put a cliche in their poem. But I will start today with a cliche and say, undoubtedly, we saved the best for last. So we are all our local notables here today, many of whom participate in the weekly poetry workshop. And there's it's really a special coaching experience, because as a little tweaking here, a tweaking there makes all the difference in the world when you put your poem together. I wanted to read a couple of little comments. These are quotes about poetry by poets. A poem is never finished, only abandoned. Paul Valery. Only those who have felt the knife can understand the wound. Rumi. Poets think they are pitchers, but they are really catchers. Jack Spicer. Energy within the poet goes into the poem, but then must go from the poem to a reader or listener. There has to be this transfer of energy. Muriel Rukeyser. Poetry is what gets lost in translation. Robert Frost, not the movie, but Robert Frost. Poetry is what gets lost in translation, not Bill Murray. Poetry is language at its most distilled and most powerful. Rita Dove. Oh, I like this one. It's not true that life is one damn thing after another. It's one damn thing over and over. Edna St. Vincent Millay. Poetry might be defined as the clear expression of mixed feelings. W.H. Auden. Poetry's work is the clarification and magnification of being. Jane Hirschfield. So tonight you're going to hear from local notable poets, and we're going to start with Walter Donway. First, a personal word about Walter's contribution. He has been an immense help and support in putting on these the poetry marathon. He has written press releases. He sends the press releases out to the media with photographs and articles, and he's just been doing a fabulous support job. Also, Walter is, amongst all of us, the only poet that's absolutely committed to meter, and it's a strength, it's a strength that he brings in his critiquing. And Walter Donway says he has enjoyed poetry at least since the fourth grade and turns to it the way others turn to music. He started writing poetry only when he had retired, however, and since then has self-published 3 books of verse. The most recent is Speak Their Names Once More, published last year by Romantic Revolution Books. Walter maintains that poetry is an art form, as an art form, is distinguished by its employment of meter, which he calls the great tradition. He views free verse, now here's where he gets a little damning, he views free verse as postmodernistic assault on the essential nature of poetry as an art form. His favorite poet in Guiding Light is William Butler Yeats, and Walter's postmortem for poetry is a line Yeats wrote in the wake of World War I. Many ingenious, lovely things are gone. Let's please welcome Walter, who's an ingenious, lovely thing, who is here.
How much time are we? 7 minutes. You going to let me know?
No, you should. No.
Okay. All right. Okay. I timed myself already. Yes, I self-published 3 books of poetry. I was in the middle of the fourth, but I decided at my age I better stop and put together a complete, because nobody's going to do it when I'm gone. I might get to the fourth. I'm going to read, try to make a pattern here and read from each book. And I'd like to read from each book a poem that I wrote about my son. They're not in chronological order, but there's a certain development in each book, I think. I was separated from my first wife when Ethan was 3. So when he was with me, I was bringing him up and had to do all that that entailed. And I was doing fine. I thought I could handle everything, but when he had his first real breakup with his girlfriend, that was a different matter. To Ethan, it is my role, surely ever has been, to dry the tears, to say the pain will pass. A little rain just now and sunshine then, the bump, that stubborn button, the lemonade that never seemed to sell, the awful fever waylaying our vacation, the band-aid appalling to pull. Your hero foretold that as these came, so they would go, secure in hope you could not share, and ever bold to beard the lion. But today, my son, you do not cry. When you have loved and lost, possessing, knowing all, ruling all, then none, you weep, and weep in pain that's yours alone. No seasoned glance assesses its depth and fixes a compass on shores well known. No nostrums, my nostrums, packets of sagacity, reside like tired toys in some shuttered past. In this pain you are a stranger to me. Where is the infant's familiar distress, the child's toppled pride crying for the kiss? I might pose that life goes on. I could guess a clear day may come to dry tears and let a laugh gust past the heart's rage. And love, not mine, not pills from that old cabinet, redress your soul's nakedness. Oh, may it be. May you become the father to the child, though that be all that remains of me. Another brief poem from this book called Sunday Morning. Enough for Sunday morning. All slides along the tilting deck as reason's very stitching tears. What comes, still shapeless in the fog, a time is coming for nightmares. Today, just sun on cobblestones, fall friendly in the little street, sweet sighing from the bakery, a bench outside, and one more seat. This again is about Ethan. This one's called Decoration. To be a hero only those few years, a hero to a boy, was not enough to brace a whole dull life. I yearn for more. But some voice murmurs how I was such stuff as rode on subways, rode office chairs that squeaked, was one who lopped each hydra-headed week through 40 years, besieging the hellish gates of merely living well. I must make do with one citation, blockish letters drawn and then retraced, as though their maker knew how time erases. My dad's my hero. A blue line sheet, creased, lost a life ago. And to bring the story up to date, new cook. My son tonight barbecues branzino, patient beside the dim, up-flaring grill. Plates clatter, scents of spice I do not know. The universe dispenses with my will. I thought to drift on whiskey through this poem, but met a script long written, in which I, hearing the screen door slap and his voice boom, "Come eat now, Dad," am certain I shall die. This is called Matilda, Facing Matilda. I like this profile to you, Matilda Bright. And so your cat, new hat, hairdo. I like your XOO, although not meant for me. Your grin, the hiked up breasts flouted in your selfie. I like your happiness. I like McMurray's bar, where you and three babes smile. I like this who you are, off Facebook for a while. I like your home tonight, wherever that may be. Like that you made stew from Mother's Recipe. Matilda, I like you. And each day is selfies, too. Although you never see my pics or click on me. I've lost track of time. Can you tell me when I'm up? Not much more, anyway. Dad's hymn, back when I went to church in the old days. In church, O are ye able, my father loved to sing, intoning, said the master, how his voice would ring. And then to bear the cross, his hand upon my head, and you're my cross to bear, was what he always said.
Our next poet will be Pauline Yates. It's so easy for me to introduce Pauline Yates, someone I've known for 35 years. We've been friends through thick and thin. Everything she touches turns beautiful, including the book that I'll show you later that she helped get into this world. So I will now read her formal introduction. Pauline Yates is a designer, artist, writer, and poet. Born in the UK, she studied fine art, philosophy, and design before leaving to fulfill her childhood dream of living in New York City. With her original philosophy and practice of design as professional focus, Pauline's work has won CODI and CFDA awards. She has advised international conglomerates and European governments on design with McKinsey & Company, and her contemporary art furniture graces homes around the world. As a poet in her early 20s, Pauline was mentored by New York poets Kenneth Koch and Barbara Guest. She studied philosophy of language and ontological design with Fernando Flores and Umberto Maturana. She will read today from two collections, Gasping at Beauty and Poems of Becoming, both to be released in 2019. She lives in East Hampton, where she also runs Sane Planet, a foundation she created to help Mother Earth survive humankind. Very badly needed as of today. Welcome, Pauline.
Thanks, Dee. So I'm going to read from two collections, which I've been threatening to release now for about a year. So it's my solemn promise that they're coming out by the end of this year. One's called Gasping at Beauty, and one's called Poems of Becoming. I've been a designer really all my life, and everything I do comes from that perspective. It's sort of a combination of right brain, left brain. My deep feeling is that we design who we are. We design our lives. We design our evolution. That life is really a continuous process of becoming, no matter what we are, trees, animals, humans. And that humans actually are self-designed that we evolve conceptually first, and then we fulfill it. This book on Gasping at Beauty, I look at different kinds of beauty here. And the first poem I'm going to read is The Beauty of Love in Relationship. It's called Silver. Silver shafting off the ocean blinds us while it sparks dusky tips of turquoise spruce. The rising blush lights seeded tops of grasses, warms a crest of dunes that trace the shore. 7 in the morning, days already shortening. Now calm September's slicing blue vitality quickens with your gaze. Heady heat of summer, once so sultry in its damp attention, wavers toward a cooler tide. Chill now trails the edge on musky midday drafts, gold-filled evenings augur bracing autumn afternoons. Fresh vigor ripples horses' flanks in fields at misted dawns. My instinct moves with sacramental gratitude, thrown to reveries, a new love nakedness, tender blue-black midnights, skin, aurora borealis drenched, birches lit with fireflies. Limbs entwined, it was impossible to sleep, our thirst too deep for summer's dry rosé to quench, a passion better served with richer, heady burgundy of winter. Slaked and satisfied, we'll stay content through January, to come alive again when April rolls around. This is a poem about the beauty of sound. Sound body. Sound moves through me. Raindrops whispering a breath on distant leaves, harmonics brushed across my skin. I'm a sultry jazz man's drum, a moment's flurry in a thrumming firefly's wing, resonating in sinew, membrane, artery, revealing oral sensibility, echoing in calcium and cartilage. I'm now a pulse of pixelated rhythm, surfing in a light-filled sea of stillness, searing boundaries of shape and self. Purified in cooling fire, form falls away, dissolved and lost within an endless bliss. I am a kiss of aching tenderness. Yeah, this is a poem about trees. And it was written before what happened in Notre Dame in Paris. And so I'd like to read it with that in mind. And it was inspired, it's called The Music of Trees, inspired by T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets. Sure. The Music of Trees, inspired by T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets. Laughter, hidden in the foliage. I know well those sacred melodies. They put Notre Dame to shame in Paris, rippling through cathedral forests. If you listen close in summer, you will hear the peal of tiny nickel bells about the size of July raindrops, spiking skin on steamy nights, faint frissons of ancient ecstasy. Resonance appears in fall as gold and copper splinters, jangling like sidelong incantations in ruffled breeze, simmering in sunrise. Bowing sentinels that breathe the world in unison sway in lissome shivers to a hushed cacophony, secret slipstream shared in canopy, song communicated to the sky. This is a poem about the beauty of grief. I had the experience of grief as a kind of rapturous interlude, because when somebody leaves, you lose all of the conflicts and the doubts that you ever had, and all that's left is love, really. Wrenching rapture, heartbreak's gift, unexpected, envelop me. Ecstatic phantom journey set me free, adrift in joy of reminiscence. Force field of loss grant amnesty for excavated wounds from casual incursions, shards of cruelty, fragments buried deep, release in healing fire. Help me claw back buried treasure, details too insignificant for memory. Trace a line through reverie, find the clues to something crucial that I missed. Grief, devotion's last communion, farewell narrative that cleaves to life, calls forth a future, dedication in a will to resurrection. Grief, the final act of love. Voice. first you find your voice, land on it, and learn to listen profoundly to yourself. This is your beginning move, the gift located at your core, the knowledge always carried within you. Honor its origin as your own. Speak up from your soul. Sing out loud. Write your story on blank pages. Scatter them before the world. Stand up to your fear. Face down your shaming shadow. Scale your inner wall of vulnerability. Stand tall in the market square. Go public. Get soul naked. Fill the space around your heart and flaunt your spark of genius. Take it to the airwaves and shout it in the streets. Proud and humbled, before the world say, here, this is who I am, my gift to you. That is to find your voice.
Thank you, Pauline. I love the range of, you know, the sultry, the sensuous, the ephemeral, the emotion, and then the dictate. You know, let's get it done. Whatever it's going to be, let's get it done. I like it. Our next poet is Virginia Walker. Virginia's a wonderful person in the workshop as well. She brings her own sensibility, different from everybody else. She's a great thinker, an intellectual. She has her PhD. Let me read a little bit about her personally. Virginia Walker of Shelter Island received her PhD in British and American literature from New York University. She has taught writing and literature courses at New England and Long Island colleges. At the National Council of Teachers of English, she presented papers on speculative fiction by women, on propaganda and ethics in fiction, and on making poetry accessible to students. She presented papers on dystopian writings of Octavia Butler and on leadership in feminist novels to the Society for Utopian Studies. At the Community College Humanities Association, she spoke on how to present the Armenian genocide to students through multimedia. She addressed the 19th Century Studies Association on the rewriting of dream conventions by Victorian women novelists. You can see it's very heady. She's a very heady poet. She is the co-author of the poetry book Neuron Mira with Michael Walsh, which raised over $10,600 for the Lustgarten Foundation for Pancreatic Cancer Research. She facilitates a poetry appreciation roundtable at the Shelter Island Library. Her poems have appeared in Poets for Paris, Suffolk County Poetry Review, The Light of City and Sea, and The Humanist. Please, let's welcome Virginia Walker. Thank you, Virginia.
Thank you, Dee. Dee gives the most wonderful introductions. You get up here, you're glowing. If anybody here has the quixotic idea of contributing to the Lustgarten Foundation through buying a poetry book, I brought a few copies of Neuron Mira with me. I haven't hit you up before, you know, for that. But anyway, I guess that was all I wanted to preface it with. For Wang Dan, legend of Tiananmen, who later wished he had made more ordered demands, flickers over the historical chaos on the screen. 30 years later, who can claim to be banner of the forward challenging the world growing complacent with technology? A world not full with freedom desired, which the new young cannot grasp since they have not known how to desire. All seems guaranteed except what their inner selves have yet to see scrolled on a screen. Will Google find the man against the tank? The state and the corporation, often the same, give youth no direction, only apps and blocking rules. No readily scratched itch requires values and accords. They arrive with the bureaucracy of the prisons, with bugs and mold, the fetid and rancid, revealing the absence of what had not been fully known absent, freedom unconfined, the many-thought freedom, many-voiced freedom, the saying, the questioning, the self-found.
P-
propagation of the faith. We were given cutouts of paper printed with nativity and crucifixion, which we folded into boxes with a slot on top to receive our coins, so we could save the souls of Africans and bring them to Holy Mother Church. I gave up candy and ribbons for a doll's trim to hoard coins for this paper missionary to set forth steady across the strong seas. Did any of my boxes, heavy with buffaloes and mercuries, help to bring more Africans to the font and the promise of heaven? Churches were built not only by Catholics. All Christian sects divided Africa. Missionaries wrestled each other to claim souls. I do not recall revelation terrors executed by priest or laity. I hope the boxes unfolded a kind Christ. Today, Africans lie tortured and beheaded in the ashes of their small churches. Children are raped and carried away. The propagation of a different faith needs no paper boxes filled with children earnest to save souls. Infidels we created fall before boxes of weapons forged in warrior text of world dominion. Whose monies will save African souls now? Birth of Humanity. As I plant my raised garden bed, ordered from Gardener's Supply, I think of that fictive first woman and know she would need no serpent to bring it to the bite of no return. Why were their acts forbidden and the tree at the center of paradise off limits to the two expected to obey? If I were to conceive Eve, the fruit of the petal would be enough to lure her. Why be an unthinking servant? We needed to seize control, not labor in compliance. I see a brave Eve willing us to knowledge, risking all for freedom. In her memory, with no God anywhere, I plant seeds in my new bed, ease my way to a Lord's bounty in Eden weather. The bees circle and the butterflies sail by. I will create my paradise, knowing all I crave. Control over my life, my owned earth, all shoots, stalks, and fruiting bodies. I crave all the words I can read written by free humanity, all that can feed the chain-breaking mind. Final poem. Passage to the Outer World. I made sure when we cut into our woods that we did so gracefully, only gradually moving to the center where the house would be on our acre plus. 40 years later, I walk up the drive to get the times, as I've done time and time again, noting all the branches dropped on the gravel, whichever we replaced at least once. I pass Lakothi, I planted the first year. Some grown, others never thrived. Tiny asters are in bloom once more. And in the spring, I can expect the wild geraniums to return. The passage is dependable for what never changes. The stunted huckleberry, the straggly viburnum. Yet the native dogwoods have died that used to line my walk to the street. Our added andromedas flourish and make colonies to deepen the woods with green. But the huge oak we saved once now dies. We twisted the drive and the house to allow it life. 3 times it was cut back, so heavy and unsafe became its shade. After a hurricane, it was cut back so the roof could be repaired. Then huge mushrooms dared its base. A death sure to come, said an arborist. Another tender of trees said he could save the oak by severely pruning, and so we did last year. But this August, all the new growth turned brown at once. My stable walk, our unchanging drive, will lose its anchoring point. The house was placed where it is because of this huge 100-year-old tree. We are only halfway there on our journey together, and I wonder what other changes of suddenness will alter our passage to and from our home to the outer world. the darkly leaning, the perennials, the coming snow that buries the gravelly way, they will be. Thank you.
Virginia, thank you. It's a cornucopia from history and government and uprisings to your garden. So I love the range. Thank you so much. We actually have a special visitor tonight. His name is Stephen Rosen, and he wanted to participate and bring to us, in memory of Harvey Shapiro, who was an author of 12 poetry books and was an editor of the New York Times Magazine for probably 100 years. He wanted to just read us some very light fare from Harvey Shapiro, and I said, absolutely participate. So here he is, Stephen Rosen, who, by the way, is a physicist.
So these are a couple of Harvey's books. And he was not only the editor of the New York Times Magazine, he was also the editor of the Book Review for many years. And I think Jacqueline Onassis referred to him as the most powerful man in the literary world of New York, because he could choose which books are reviewed in the Book Review. So Harvey and I met in a very unusual way, which I will tell you another time. But we bonded and we became very close, and I miss him very much. He died 7 years ago. New York notes. Caught on a side street in heavy traffic, I said to the cabbie, I should have walked. He replied, I should have been a doctor. When can I get on the 11:33, I asked the guy in the information booth at the Atlantic Avenue station. When they open the doors, he says, I am home among my people. How Charlie Shavers died. He had a gig, but he was hurting. His doctor said, play the date, then check into the hospital. That night, when the party ended and the band packed up, Charlie started to give stuff away, his watch, his rings, to the women in the room. Then he circled the room with his horn, playing, quote, for all I know, we may never meet again, unquote. At this point, the man who was telling the story in the locker room at the Manhattan Plaza gym and who had sung the line slowly with a pause between each word began to cry. By the way, this is a picture of Harvey. We were honored and able to memorialize him. Two more very short poems. This one is posthumous, A Momentary Glory, and here's the title poem from that posthumous collection. It's titled A Momentary Glory. This world is a momentary glory. I never thought it would last forever, so I tried to get it down in one notebook or another, in one poem or another. Somewhere you can find it. And finally, The Old Jew. Who would have thought his taste for pickled herring would outlast his taste for women?
So I'm next. I didn't bring a formal bio.
Can I say so?
I am desperate for it. Why? Because the only poem I've written this summer is called Writer's Block. And Writer's, so here it is. And it's now been worked on three times because it's the only poem I keep bringing to the workshop because that's what's going on, okay? But I think it's a great poem now. Okay, here we go. Writer's Block. Paper. Pencil. But no paragraph. Empty, as a silkless lingerie drawer. I rummage for words. How can I transform a figment to a fragment, this paper to a raft, my pencil to an oar? Stranded, parched, starved for syllables, yearning for an exclamation point. It is pointless. There is no flow. Adrift in this lonely archipelago, I will drown until a semantic mermaid rescues me. So now I'm going to read. So now to bring it back to Pauline and Barry, who were the beautiful artist designers of this lovely book that I self-published. But it's a very beautiful book, and if it wasn't for them, it wouldn't be here. So I'll read you just a few of the poems from here. Okay, so this is interesting because this is also about the act of writing poetry, this poem. Cashmere Night. I cannot tell if a plump leaf is on the table or if it is a withering thought. Is the hour turquoise or gray? This stillness, soft as cashmere, wakes me, beckons, use me. I rise and break the grave. At my kitchen table, I brush aside the quotidian tokens of continuity, a chocolate sprinkle, a pale flake. As in the birth of child, I push for worthy words, to fill our nostrils with first breath. The dark invites this deliverance. An otherwise escaped convict, I am wanted for murder. But in this real light, the bullet slows. My shoulders lean into the table with my pen in hand and sprinkle on my tongue the stench of the continuous, interrupted by a dignity only known to songbirds of the night. This is just a poem to make you feel good. Okay. I am a cow. I am a cow. There is nothing I must do but eat the grass and gently remind the flies I prefer they find another ass. I am brown and white and very large, my clout determined by my size, and no less the color of my eyes. My chin flesh arcs a vast dominion, voted most likely to succeed by unanimous opinion. The mother of four, I've been called a whore, my swaying stride a source of pride and obvious attraction. My owner confides he fondly drinks my milk. I polish my hooves a bright magenta to match the blush pink of my nose. I sunbathe weekly without SPF and meditate to elevate my repose. Considering there is nothing I must do, I'm rather busy standing in tall grass, monitoring my chews. I swallow twice so my milk mellows and my fat-filled butter turns bright yellow. I would not trade my place with you. You speak to defend all you do. As for me, I only have to moo. So this is about, reflection of youth. 2 hours. Hours time, H-O-U-R-S. Take me 2 hours for $96, cross France, cross Spain to Silver Valleys, exquisite youth with no borders to keep, and summer breath that barely sleeps. Looking back, I wish I'd known the beguiling cost of oats not sown. I could have added a little spice, frequently offered more than twice. In Greece, I would have broken plates, released the passion I condemned to wait, allowed the sea at midnight's hour to bathe me in a naked shower, invited more from that stranger's kiss, spent nights in arms that beckoned bliss, returned hungry looks from rugged boys, pressed my breasts on their angled jaws. Now 3 times 20 has filled my hollows, while I waded only narrow shallows. 2-hour rides never touch a border. My breath and sleep dwell in perfect order. But intrepid dreams drum otherwise, cross years, cross time in sly disguise. If I had known the train moves so fast, I would have designed a different past. So this poem I might have read to you last year, and it's been slightly modified. And actually, I'm looking at the people in this room who coached me through this poem, so hopefully you like it, because it's half yours. Okay. August, say goodbye. August, say goodbye to them. Watch her lover flee in dawn, down the dewy mountain moor, to the life to which he's sworn. The star's silhouette fading, so too the kisses on her lips he bestowed as God does rain. On her skin they turn to mist. She captured his devotion, her hazel gaze transcended. The quiet life she led reversed with her surrender. As a flower to the sun will evoke itself beyond the boundary known as beauty, just as summer's gone. August, heed your salient end. New life destroyed in one season. Her lover never did return. She fades for the same reason. Thank you. Now, we've been lucky enough this summer to have heard from Rosalind, who's a painter, a sculptor, a stained glass artist, and a poet. And she runs the best bed and breakfast when your guests need a room in East Hampton. Okay, and a formal introduction. Rosalind Brenner, poet, painter, and glass artist, explores the mysterious energies of imagination and memory in her art and in her poems. She grew up in New York City and lived in Heidelberg, Germany for 3 years. She received her MFA in creative writing from Sarah Lawrence College and lives with her artist husband in East Hampton, New York, where they run Art House, their much-loved bed and breakfast. Rosalind's the mother of 2 sons, grandmother of 3 grandsons. She loves to travel, draws inspiration from her visits to the Far East and as much of the world as she can get to. Her previous publications include Omega's Garden, a chapbook, All That's Left, a book of her poems and paintings, and poems in many journals. She'll actually now be reading from her first full-length book. Two books. Okay. Every Glittering Chimera. Please let's welcome Rosalind Brenner.
So I didn't think I was going to be able to come tonight. Was very happy to be able to do a reading here earlier in the season, but of course, having a bed and breakfast, this is my crazy time. So I just grabbed my books, and mine is going to be more of a montage than a series, as Walter did. I'll read a couple from each book. X at the dinner party. You lean into me with your memoir life. Lean into me. Perplexed blue eyes, I saw myself in once. I shucked my bones for you. You hoarded them like trophies. Now this, you leaning into me, open wide, take out your teeth to show me why you can't eat corn. You whisper the names of dead friends, remember restaurants. Your mouth collapses. I have a good life now, you say, and stumble into a wormhole stooped from the weight of leftovers. Under the belly, sing. The morning's amethyst sky. Be here, the moment pearl, droplets, pebble, Montauk daisies, green life, lambent sun, salt air, ants trek the peony, blossoms thirst for light. Plant cactus, careless of spines, to find your skin. Uncover the raw beneath the flesh of you. Find what makes you in a waking beach. You are reflection in the dark walker's glasses. Those shells and stones, their sound like castanets against the shore. That weed, a plank lifting from the boardwalk, the intaglio of your footprint in the sand, the cup of rooibos tea you sip. A gull drops his oyster, squawks. He dives, beak pulls hungry at its meat. Breath sleeps in you until you watch it. Slip on your running shoes, take the shoreline, jump naked into the freezing bay. So that's from my chapbook, Omega's Garden. My poems are very much narrative poems, some lyric about nature and that sort of thing, but they're kind of compressed stories. This one was published in a wonderful anthology about migration, From Everywhere a Little. So I'm going to read this to you. It's a story, really. The Hole. When the Black Hand shot Archduke Franz Ferdinand in the jugular on a bridge in Sarajevo near her village, Branka was 6. She had been taught the Goyim would beat her with a cross if she entered the forest. As that shot started World War I, her father, to her a faded photo on her mama's farmhouse wall, got a message through. He found a place for them in New York City, America. You must come now. 2. On Delancey Street, Branka's teacher poked her sharp-nailed finger through the pink Angora sweater. What's this hole, Jew girl? She yanked the threads, gave Branka a Shiksa name, Betty. I had to quit school because we couldn't afford a gym suit, Mother told me, when I was old enough to understand. I was a beauty, too smart for my own good. I buried myself in books and boys and men. And then your father. The hole grew larger. 3. Mother sang show tunes with the radio. Outside our third floor window, a dark shaftway rang with davening. Across the valley, the alley, in the shul's sparse square of dirt, weeds and garbage grew. She dressed me in pinafores, checkered coats with velvet collars from B. Altman's. Hand in hand, we'd walk the wooden floors, peering into showcases. She picked dresses, pointed out wide pleated sleeves that looked like accordions, smooth silk sashes, yards of petticoats for her to press away creases. I dressed and undressed my bride doll, sent by Dad from somewhere far away, while Mom tried on clothes in the open dressing room. Olive-pupiled eyes opened and shut. Click, 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 click. 4. I learned to sing her favorite songs so we could harmonize. Much later, I paid for lipsticks she pocketed from Woolworth's 5 and dime. Rudy Valley almost discovered me, Mother told me many times. We were crossing Fifth Avenue. He came right up, said I should be in movies because I'm gorgeous. Rudy Valley. And your father just kept yanking me across the street. That's from this lovely, all kinds of migration and immigration stories that is published by Don Hoag. I don't know the exact name of the publisher, but Don Hoag and Lisa Vivos. They published really nice anthologies. Okay, so another story, and this is my book with my poetry and paintings. I think some of you might appreciate this. Double vision. In the summer side lanes of East Hampton, Porsches and Mercedes can't go fast enough to please their passengers because natives in pickups deliberately slow down. Sales girls in beach shacks slip on their dream clothes, and wild turkeys strut like showmen, their wattles quivering with indignity as they cross Hog Creek Lane. Impatient drivers swerve while roadkill deer are shoveled away. Once I stopped my car to help a turtle cross 3 Mile Harbor Road and was nearly struck down by a hell-for-leather out-of-towner. I still get out to usher critters across, but I look both ways and flail my arms like a drunken traffic cop. They stop. But who am I to take the moral high ground? I crunched a boxed turtle at the bottom of our hill. It felt like bones grinding beneath my wheels. I carried the broken shell and body to the bay and found a quiet spot for burial under sand and stones. The usually indifferent sunset shouted at me through streaks of orange and aqua, "Why the hell don't all of you slow down?" Time and I do slow when seasons shift. Weather rises like a golem on the bay as cold arrives. I bundle in my jacket and boots to get the mail, then back inside to watch snow veil cedars as it settles on my garden Buddha. Nobody for a while. I'm going to do one more from the new book, if you don't mind. Is that okay? This was like a very fast choice I made. 7 a.m. In that region bisected by dream and waking, half away, half here, I moan good morning. Already you are inching out of bed. Your side of the cooling sheets holds your scent, smells like love. My arms wrap around my pillow. I watch you begin to pull on clothes in the patina of first light. I call you back, adjust my body, rising to grant you access. And though each of us asks for less than wild, the dazzle of our coupling eases the baggage we help each other carry through the day. Thank you.
So it's not surprising that Rosalind has a very picturesque approach to poetry, so because she is a painter, probably a painter first, and so we can see the scene she paints, the poetic scene is so clearly painted. So thank you so much. Our final poet tonight will be Carol Stone. We were also lucky enough last week to hear from Carol. Carol's a prolific poet. She brings a different poem to every workshop, and she sometimes brings two. So I'll read you her formal introduction. She's Distinguished Professor of English and Creative Writing Emerita from Montclair State University. Her collections include Hurt the Shadow from Dos Madres Press, American Rhapsody from Cavan Carey Press, Traveling with the Dead, Backwaters Press, and All We Have Is Our Voice, Dos Madres Press. Her work has been nominated for the Pushcart Prize, and she's received 3 fellowships from the New Jersey State Council on the Arts. Her poems have appeared most recently in Blue Fifth Review, Chest, A Journal of Medicine, Pen and Brush, The Bellevue Literary Review. She divides her time between Springs, East Hampton, and Verona, New Jersey. Let's welcome Carol Stone.
In the spirit of today's reading, I didn't bring any of my books because I have read from them at these other readings that some of you have been kind enough to attend. So I'm going to read poems today that you all saw at the workshop, and you might hear some changes, and I think that would be very good. The first one is called Two Men Holding a Tallit, after a painting by Shimson Lemberger. Each of the men holds tight to his end of the prayer shawl, unable to give it up. One claims it was his great-grandfather's, the other that he found it near his house, possession, 9/10 of the law. The rabbi strokes his beard as if remembering King Solomon's judgment. He rules that the talit must be divided. The painter doesn't show how the men would live with half. I want them to sit together, sip steaming tea through cubes of sugar clenched in their teeth, talking of human loss and holy things. I do have a lot of paintings. I have a whole book based on Edward Hopper's paintings, and I don't know how I got to this one, but there it is. Flamingo, for Richard Hinchliffe, 1915 to 2019. Our son-in-law bought it at an art sale. For 20 years, it stood in the battered barrel outside our Springs house, as if it would be with us forever. It was there when we came home late at night. It watched our house through winter snow. Pink faded, body cracked, it has toppled over. My husband hauls it to the dump, where it will mingle with the earth. We scrape the barrel's dead leaves away, add fertilizer, dig impatience into the dirt. O flamingo, goodbye to you, a fiction, as we all are. Every day we water the flowers, hover over them like anxious parents. Making tortillas. I love food poems. How easy it is for the women at the Mercado. Their hands covered with dough, they slap each thick slice like wrestlers, pinning challengers to the mat. I blend flour with lard, sprinkle a dash of salt, a little water, put the dough in a mixing bowl to knead. I dust the cutting board, roll out each tortilla, shape it, toss it onto the griddle until it's crisp, wrap it in a dish towel. Later, I'll rip one apart, as if I've lived here all my life, and like the market women say, que bueno. An education. In Washington Square Park, across from NYU, I studied philosophy in a class of 100. In the student lounge, the socialists argued with the communists, and the Trotskyites handed out leaflets no one read. After classes, I hung out at the White Horse to catch a glimpse of Dylan Thomas, browsed for hours in the 8th Street bookstore before taking the Hudson Tubes back to New Jersey. I believed the city would lead me to my destiny, if there were such a thing. On Bedford Street, where Vincent, as Millay called herself, loved to make love, she wrote a poem to save Sacco and Vanzetti, sentenced to death, their real crime being immigrants, anarchists. Now new tribes kill each other. I still don't understand why humans choose the coarse wings of death. And for my last poem, just cheer us all up. Hugs and kisses. The French kiss you on each cheek. Eskimos rub noses. The English peck lightly. Latinos crush with an abrazo. Hungarian men click their heels and kiss your hand. Snobs blow a kiss into the air as if it could be caught. Mothers cuddle their babies, whisper cutie pie. In my family, no one kissed, no one hugged, no one called me dearest, no one said love you before hanging up the phone. Arms around my body, I hug myself, stroke my forehead, whisper baby, sweetie, darling. No one says necking anymore. In his parked car in front of 529 Clinton Place, Ted put his hands on my breasts. I let him kiss my shoulders. We do this for hours until we got tired. His shaving lotion smelled nice. Aww. Thank you.